Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds and souls, the hearts and lives of the people of all the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I'm a winter boy. I'm a Chicago boy. I'm a traveler. I'm a shitty eater. God, I've been eating like shit lately. Why? I lost so much weight, and then you just slowly watch it come back on. I'm not a Weight Watcher. Most importantly, though, I'm a professional wrestler, and I am sitting here live in my studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before we go any further, this is a fan support and listener support podcast supported by people just like you. We get to free of charge every single Thursday. ColtCabana.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts from. Colt, great ways that you can support, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, tweet it out, Facebook it out. Best way that you can support, though, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posts, DVDs, blah, 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 blah. Plus, don't forget about that book I'm selling. I'm home next week, Monday through Thursday, and then I leave for Japan. So if you want to get those orders in for Christmas, you better get them in. That's my last day selling. Those can be ordered at ColtMerch.com or DigitalColt.com. I'm in a weird mood, right? You can feel it. You can hear it. I'm in a giddy mood. Still been shipping out those books. Wrestling Dreams going very well. Love seeing those videos. Love seeing those kids reading. Love seeing some retweets, some hashtags. Who would have thunk? What if that was like my greatest achievement ever in wrestling? Almost 2 decades of wrestling. And he's remembered for a little children's book. A 26-page, I don't know, maybe it's 30-page children's book. A couple words. Some beautifully drawn pictures by Erica Weiss. And that is his legacy. I'll tell you one person who's famous for drawing Road Warrior Animal drew on his face his whole career. I asked him about it. I'm like, yo, you got to do that every night? And he's like, yep. And then we get into it. That's the questions. Those are the sort of questions you get from Colt Cabana. What's the story with drawing on your face? This was a nice podcast to wind down the year. This was done in 1 hour tees at the store at Pro Wrestling Tees. Animal was there doing a signing. I was home. We walked right in. We did a little walking and talking. We talk Zubaz. We talk Minnesota. We talk You Shall Listen. Couple reminders. At the end of the year, I'm going to do an AMA, Ask Me Anything. I think the plan right now, I think that's going to be the first one in 2018. And then I'll do a year in review where I'll kind of describe everything that's going to happen going forward, where you might have to send in some more AMAs if you're more intrigued. But send those to coltwrestling@gmail.com. Use a voice memo. That way I can play it on the show. Who you are, where you're from, subject AMA. Ask a question. We'll put it on the podcast. I also got a new P.O. box. That's on the websites, both coltmerch.com and coltcabana.com. It's because I moved. It's still a process. I'm barely home. I mean, I don't know. I've slept in this thing maybe a couple of days. I did sleep on a ghost bed. I got a ghost bed. You can too. One of those ones that come in a carton. I don't know. I put a YouTube video of me opening it if you want to kind of see my room in my new apartment and how ghost beds work. I also got a new bidet. Brundell sent me a bidet. That's how getting new apartments work, is you reach out to whoever wants to help. So it's been a couple of weeks since I've chatted. Last time I was in England. Last week's episode was from Fest. It was so much fun. I love doing the live shows, and that I think might have been my favorite one. There's been a lot of favorite ones over the years, but that was just so easy to do and lots of fun. Yeah, I was in England shooting a pilot. Hopefully it gets picked up, and hopefully I become a TV star in the UK. Can't seem to become one over here, so maybe over in the UK. I'll keep you updated if anything happens. I'm sure it won't. That's how I think. Also went to New York, WrestlePro. That's who I wrestled for. 2 shows for WrestlePro. If you live in New York or New Jersey, I recommend getting trained at WrestlePro. Great fun shows, and you're around professional people. And there's something about those New Yorkers. There's something about them New Yorkers, you know? And this week I head back to the East Coast. I'll be doing live commentary on the pay-per-view Final Battle if you want to listen to me and Ian Riccoboni. We'll be doing some commentary on pay-per-view. And if you don't, then don't. Maybe you're just waiting to listen to Road Warrior Animal, and I don't blame you. Song of the Week is by a ska punk band from Oldham, England. They're called The Crash Mats, and they're fucking great. Twitter, @TheCrashMats, Facebook/TheCrashMats, and buy some of their music off their label, hornhoofrecords.bandcamp.com. This song is called Terry Funk Forever. Enjoy it, and we'll be back with Road Warrior Animal. This is exciting because we're at the Pro Wrestling Tees store. You know, Ryan tells me if you're into it, you like it, and you're involved with it, and you're very hands-on, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, in this business, you know, Honk and I have always been, you know, even when we started our company, Zubaz, we would bring boxes of Zubaz to the locker room and just hand them out to the boys. And we were always our own self-promoter of wearing the crap down to the ring and doing run-ins with it and everything else. And it just got to be world known, right? And when Ryan hooked me up with it, he said, you were involved with this with the Pro Wrestling Tees. I said, bro, I said, I will be your walking billboard. So, and I like to be hands-on, and I like to help with the designs of the shirt, because that's one thing I designed all the stuff that, and people don't realize this, all the stuff that Hawk and I wore. From our first spiked vest to the paint designs on the face, I would give Hawk ideas. I did my own. And then from the spiked shoulder pads, all that, I always designed all that stuff for us. If we wanted to change colors, I picked the colors we were going to use, different designs on our wrestling tights, everything else. So I kind of like doing that stuff, and then go figure, right? My daughter's an interior designer as well, so it's kind of in our blood. We like to do that kind of thing.
Were you an artist kid?
No, bro. Listen, my brother Mark... I don't know, you know, my brother Mark was one of the Wrecking Crew. He was a WCW champ, right? He's a graphic artist designer. He does stuff for a bunch of vitamin companies like Beauty Fit and that, and does their graphic designs for their computer sites and for the protein stuff and everything. Me, bro, I can't draw you a stick man on a piece of paper, well, but I can paint my face. But I can paint my face and put this great, cool-looking spider thing on my head. And, you know, I remember one time I even did Batman wings when the Batman movie first came out. But, yeah, man, I'm a horrible artist.
Yeah, but if you had the designs and the ideas, so it was just, it's in your head, but it wasn't, you told somebody else to make
bro,
it?
Bro, it's in my head, and I could tell, I'm a great coach.
Okay.
I can tell everybody what to do. I just can't do it a lot of times, you know, unless it came to be something with to do with, you know, with sports, you know, because like even when my son James made it to the NFL, I had to be one of the guys. I had to get down and show the kids how to hit the blocking sled. I couldn't tell them then, you know. When it comes to anything to do with art, forget about it.
That was so Ryan dressed up as you for Halloween, and I had Darso on. And like, you know, that's a question that like I guess we don't think about, but we wonder that if you're wrestling 300 days a year, you're putting, because Ryan was like, does he have a stencil or does somebody put that paint on? I was like, no, he's doing that every night, right?
Yeah, man.
Do you get it down to a science?
You know, in the beginning, we were using this circus paint that would take off, I'm not kidding you, 2 or 3 layers of skin every time he took it off, to the point where our skin was bleeding. So one day I look over and I'm looking at Kamala. and I said, James, I said, what kind of paint you got on there?
And he goes, you have to do the impression.
He goes, it's Liquitex, Joe. He sounded such like a Louisiana black guy, right? And gotta love the guy. He's a sweetheart. But it's little tubes now, and it's artist paint. Now, if I were to paint down on a wall, and it's not coming off. But you put it on your skin, and it lets it stick, but the oils in your skin don't let it adhere total. And then when you get done, like, I'll go wash it off later, and I'll wipe it off with a wet rag, and it comes right off. And it's no problem. And I wish I would have had this years ago.
Wait, but how come but when you're in the ring, the sweat, or this is years later?
Well, but the sweat, who cares, though? I mean, by the time it starts to run off with the sweat in the ring at the end of the match, then our motto was, the people know you've been in a fight. We would do the interview saying, hey, look at my face. My paint's all messed up, and you did it. We're going to kick your butt next time. And it would lead into the next promo. You know, as you know, in the wrestling business, programs were 6 months to a year long. They weren't 3 weeks like they are now, you know. Right. So, and you would lead up, and you could use that if it got messed up for your next interview. But, yeah, man, that's and you can, man. Who would have thought I'd been painting this many years anyway, right? Here I am.
And you can knock, like, what is it, 3 minutes, 10 minutes?
Oh, I do it. I can get it done in 15. Like, today took a little longer because I kept screwing up these damn spider legs over here in the corner, and I kept wiping them off with my fist. Now I'm taking skin off because I'm pissed. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, but I could put on, what, you know, it's kind of got to the point, and not far from what Ryan said, I do the outline of the black first, and then I look at it and I decide, okay, what colors are going to look good? And to be honest with you, I looked off the t-shirt here, and that's why I did the colors off the t-shirt today.
What about, do you have a house show face painting technique? Like back in the day.
Bro,
back in the day.
I used to have a spot show paint job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It would be no white in the middle, and it would be no colors but black in the spider and just a red dot in the middle of the spider.
As quick as possible.
That would take 2 seconds, you know? Especially when you come in late on the flight and you're the main event, and you go running in, you know, and you're trying to get there quick, and you got to do it on a fly. Sometimes we'd have to paint up in a taxi cab.
Yeah.
And get dressed in there, you know, just, oh, man, it's crazy.
Okay, a couple, I wanted to hit the Zubaz for a second, but I was interested in the idea of that, like, I'm always super interested in where, when you were, like, my age or maybe even younger in your career, where you thought you would be right now doing what you would be doing with yourself.
Well, I always thought right now at this point in time in my career, right, that I would be one of the head coaches or trainers or one of the head agents with WWE. I actually had that conversation with Vince when Hawk was still alive back in 2000. And when we did our last run in there at WWE, and I said, hey, listen, man, when I'm done, Vince, I hope you expect that you respect me enough in this business, because I was always the finish guy. Anytime we ever did a match in our whole career, Ellering would look over our shoulder or make sure it was good for us to do. I was the finish guy, and Hawk didn't give a crap. He was the animal, tell me what's going on. So I would go have to tell Hawk everything, and then half the time Hawk was inebriated, so I had to watch what he was doing, make sure he got everything he had to do in the ring done, and he wouldn't kill himself or kill his partner that we're in the ring with, and then remember my stuff. You know, I'm really, if there's a manager involved, I'm trying to remember 6 guys' things, right? And I pride myself on finishes and doing stuff correctly in a business, because being a big guy, I can do stuff that a 180-pound guy could do, like backflips and that kind of things off the top rope. But I also was good at training the big guys, like the 7'2" guys and Taker and those kind of guys. So I wanted to be able to pass that down in the wrestling business. But whatever reason, man, you just maybe you don't think I'm a coach or a trainer down there or something, but it just never worked out for me to go down there. I mean, I went down to Tampa a few times, and I got to work with guys like Mason Ryan and Roman Reigns and, you know, Bray Wyatt. And who else was down there, man? God, there was a whole bunch of guys down there, some big guys too. And I got to work with them and taught the guys how to be big guys, how to sell properly, how to, you know, just don't go flying around on an arm drag, get knocked and knocked and then, you know, and then do the move, you know, which makes both opponents look like they're athletes, not just one guy.
So since that's not your job now, I mean, I see that you go to Japan quite a bit.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, you're kind of a retired wrestler / character.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just what? Do you hang out like most days? You know, like, what's the business?
No, man. What I do, as long as I keep looking halfway like animal, because I still work out all the time, the wrestling fans love it.
Of course.
And so.
But you're not wrestling. I'm saying you're not wrestling.
No. Yeah, but believe it or not, though, I do step in the ring. And listen, it's not that I can't wrestle. After that debacle thing they tried to do with me and Heidenreich, I just stepped away from it and said, it's got to be a very special occasion for me to do something. Now, I am talking with Scott Norton right now about he and I trying to tag together.
That'd be amazing.
For New Japan. Right. Trying to do some stuff there. And I love the New Japan office. I respect those guys, either New Japan or All Japan. I don't care. They're both great offices. And we're thinking about throwing something together. I know even Inoki's company has contacted him and wants to get together with me to do something. So, you know, those guys are great guys, and I respect them both. You know, Norton, of course, went to high school with Hawk. So there's a tie-in there with me and Norton, you know, him being Hawk's buddy in high school. So you never know, man. I mean, I did a cage match about 6 months ago. Okay. I'll get in a ring, and even when I go to Japan, I get involved somehow. Like, poor Sean Hernandez, man. I clotheslined the crap out of Sean Hernandez outside the ring when I went over there for DSW about a month ago. And I felt bad, but, you know, Sean's a great guy, man, great worker. But yeah, man, I love going to Japan. I do a lot of Comic Cons. I do Comic Cons all over the world, actually. And you know, I do a lot of speaking engagements too. You know, believe it or not, corporations like Coca-Cola or Pepsi will bring you in and say, you know, because they're having problems because this higher up thinks he's above everybody and won't talk to the underneath guys, and the underneath guys are pissed off because the higher up won't give them the time of day. And I try to tell them, man, listen, bro, you guys are all on a big team. You're all on a big team here, man. If letter A doesn't work, man, letter Z makes no money.
Now, what do you use your experiences in football and coaching, or do you use experiences in wrestling for that kind of stuff?
I think I approach everything like a coaching, man, because it's not a.
But wrestling is so, you know, it's subjective, yeah. Right? So there is no best. I don't know if you feel that way, but, you know, it's whoever the booker man is choosing to go over, right?
Yeah, but that's true in a sense. And I think in a lot, you're right, that is true in a sense, but the people will ultimately decide who they love. And that's why, you know, being in this business, when you look at the top, there's probably top five guys that are beyond over guys. And Hawk and I are blessed to be two of those guys, but you're talking like a Bruno and a Hogan and maybe a Stone Cold and a Rock. You know what I mean? You put those guys are different. I tell people those are different overtop guys. Then you have below that is, you know, your Stangs and the other guys like that, your Triple H's. And you got the guys. And it's not demeaning anybody. It's mean the people will ultimately decide who they want the man to be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is the things you can't teach, as you know, in this wrestling, but you can't teach charisma. And the same with coaching. You can't become a good coach unless you, A, really know what the hell you're talking about to be able to teach somebody what to do. And that's what I always prided myself on, man. Listen, I'm not the know-it-all. I'm not going to be Vince Lombardi. I'm not going to be able to teach you how to wrestle like Ric Flair. But I've got to be in the ring with all the best. I mean, from the Briscoes to the Funks, from the Flairs to the Hogans, to all the top guys ever, from the Rock, Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, everybody. You know, Jumbo Tsuruta and, you know, Tendu and Choshu and Yukinsuke and all these guys that I've learned, everybody's style needs a little bit of nurturing, a little bit different. Wrestling at the end of the day is the same thing. It's how you do your craft, you know? And I can look at it as from an objective view. I have no problem telling a guy, hey, that looks like crap. Mm. Or if it looks good. So in that way, I'm kind of a coach that way. But you're right, man. The booker man makes a decision, and he can pull. He can ultimately pull the plug. I mean, he tried. See, that was the difference between Hawk and I, though, because we got so babied for the first 12 years of our career. First 12 years, okay. I'm just saying, by the time our first stint to go in with the WWF, after Hawk was getting suspended for a drug test all the time, they tried to put the brakes on us. But by then, we already were the household name of tag teams. You got to remember, back then, and even today, we were the only, and still till today, we're the only tag team that wrestles main events. You know, that ever wrestled main events in the U.S. pretty much. That means sell out domes and Square Gardens, Madison Square Garden, and all that stuff. And no other teams does, because they don't let the teams have that much power anymore.
Right.
And we had a lot of stroke back then. And, of course, we had a great guy behind us, Paul Ellering, that said, that's not good for you guys, or that's good for you guys.
I don't know. This is all hearsay, and maybe you can help me out, that he, like, made a statement that, like, there was a point where he was like, oh, tag teams aren't a thing anymore.
Oh, right? It's still like that now. Look at this business.
Right. Well, for sure it is now. Yep. But, you know, when I grew up and when you were like doing it, mm-hmm. it was tag team. And then it came a point where like it became like Rock and Mankind would be a tag, and that was like a real tag.
Well, if you look, the only company that really had great tag teams was the NWA. If you look, remember back at the time, man, you had Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, the Koloss. You had, who else? You had the Four Horsemen. You had Hawk and I, man. You had, you know, Dusty Rhodes would bring in Stan Hansen. You had so many ways to go and to choose from. You know, the Steiner Brothers and, you know, guys like that. And then now what you get for a tag team is they throw two guys together and they expect them to have a great tag team match.
Right.
A tag team match is a very intricate match, man. People can tell if you got chemistry together. And they like to be able, and they like a lineage here a little bit. Like, they love guys who've been friends for a long time, or they like guys who've been brothers, you know, because they're really, especially like overseas in Japan, they love the brother thing. And they love factions, as you know. Like, they love the Bullet Club type thing, because that's what they're really into. They're really into that close-knit thing and the unity part of the wrestling business. But in the U.S., man, Vince McMahon has always been a singles territory. From WWF to WWE, I mean, why would you change it? You had from Superfly to Hulk Hogan to, and you're drawing money, selling that everywhere, single guys.
Did you have like conversations with him trying to change his mind, or were you there when he kind of made those statements and you're like, what the fuck, were the Road Warriors?
No. But I was there one time when Vince McMahon, you get a picture of this now. Here we are. I mean, we've been everywhere. We worked for the two top Japanese companies at the time, and they were bidding each other for us at the time, All Japan and New Japan. And working main events everywhere. Maybe it was more 12 years. Maybe it was like 15 years. And then we go to WWF. And the first time we went there, we refused, and we stayed with Crockett with the NWA. Then we went back there the second time, and we went to Vince's house, and we had a discussion about it. And he says, well, he goes, I have the Ultimate Warrior here, Joe, and I have the Modern Day Warrior coming in here. So I don't want to have too many warriors for marketing. He goes, can we change your name up here? He goes, I'll have to repackage you up here so the people know who you are. And I started belly laughing. It probably had heat right off the bat with Vince, right? Hawk was looking at me going, animal, you know. And I said, Vince, I said, so how about this? And I said, how about the Legion of Doom? Looks at me, goes, I like that. And he had no idea. No idea we owned the Legion of Doom. And, you know, we got the Legion of Doom like year one. We were in a Red Roof Inn somewhere in Columbus, Ohio, and we were getting ready to leave the hotel room to run. You know, that's when we were doing like 300 days a year on the road. And a Super Friends cartoon was on the TV, and you heard, meanwhile, back at the Legion of Doom, the bad guys, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I look at Ellering, I look at Hawk, and I said, we got to be the Legion of Doom.
Fuck yeah.
We named the Legion of Doom that day. And then we had Jake Roberts, and the Spoiler was the original Legion of Doom. And then the Spoiler, Don Jardine, was getting older, so he retired. And then Jake went up to New York, so we said, that's it. Three Musketeers, one for all for one, just Hawk and I and Ellering. We're the Yellow D, the Road Warriors. So that's from then on, we got announced, Precious Paul Elling presents from the Legion of Doom, Animal and Hawk, the Road Warriors. And that was it. So when Vince agreed to the Legion of Doom, he said, okay. But then he got hot because then we owned the name.
Yeah. But that was after it was all presented. Ooh,
but
right?
After we all presented, after the contracts are signed, and you go to do the patent search. Sorry.
Yeah. And he still went forward. Like,
oh, yeah. Well, he had to, man. Right. What else are you going to do?
What was the courting process for him? I mean, was that it? Just, hey, come over and you'll do this? Or was there a big courting process for
him? Before Demolition, you know, he brought us out to his house in Stamford, Connecticut, and then he had the, I think it's actually Greenwich, Connecticut, where he lives, and then he had the, Chinese maid there, made some authentic Chinese food. I will never forget it. And I looked, and as we're looking on the wall there, and I see Vince's got talk about a narcissist, right? He has got this picture on the wall. It's got to be a 6-foot painting of himself from the waist up.
I think they just got like revealed on the internet somewhere, that
bro,
picture.
It's got a green like the green leisure suit on. The most Vince had some of the ugliest sport coats at one time, bro. And I looked at that picture and I said to Vince, I said, "Hey, was that pre-Deca or after Deca?" just ribbing him on the square, and he didn't smile too much with it, but he tried to recruit us to come in there, and he says, "Although we want to give you here as opportunity, now at the time, we were already offered a guaranteed contract by Crockett." And I looked at Ellering and those guys and said, "Bro, we got guaranteed money sitting here for 225 days a year, and then you want to have this guy, he could run us 300 days a year and not tell us what we're going to make?" I said, "Let's take the guaranteed money." So we all decided to take the guaranteed money.
Were you in some kind of like split, or did the Crockett office not know you were at his house, or how did
we told him?
You told who?
Jim Crockett.
Yeah. You said we're going to listen to
him. We're going up to hear Vince's pitch. And just letting you know.
And what was his?
we just want to let you know what our offer is before you go. And we sat down with Jimmy Crockett in his office, and Hawk and I made X amount of dollars. Ellering had a great. Ellering made more money than most of the boys at that time. And we got Paul Ellering a great contract, and because Paul actually deserved every penny of it, because he did a lot of extra stuff for us that people didn't realize. And we went up and talked to Vince and said, "We want to go over here on a pipe dream, man. We want the guaranteed money." So then the next time we came back, and what started the dissension between Hawk and Vince, you know, that, you got to imagine in that time, then Vince had his 2 years to have demolition. That's all we heard about was demolition. You know, copying the Road Warriors. Vince said, "Well, I can't have the Road Warriors." In his mind, he says, "Well, I'll make my own Road Warriors." So finally, he brings us in there, and we go do it. Well, here we think we're going to wrestle Demolition for like a year. Mm. We wrestled him the first match and beat him in 8 minutes. I said, "Well," I looked at Barry Darso, who's a friend of mine, who was smashed Demolition. I said, "Well, that didn't go very well. Not I mean, what great for us and good for you guys." I said, what a waste of time. And Demolition was pissed. But what started the downfall of it was that at the end of the year with our pay, and Vince knew what we expected to get as a team, he paid us like each over $100,000 less. And we said, "Vince, that wasn't our deal. Wasn't our deal for this pay. You knew what you needed to get." "Oh, it must be a mishap in the bar. You know, you'll make it up marketing-wise." Well, we never did. The next year was the same thing. That's when Hawk said pretty much, "F this. No one's going to tell me I can't drink, I can't smoke, I can't do this. And then you want to hose me on the pay too? Forget it." And that's when Hawk decided he went off the deep end a little bit.
Right.
Not a little bit. It went off the deep end a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's take you back to, you grew up in Minnesota, is that right?
Yeah.
Just growing up, getting into wrestling. I mean, this is probably a story everyone, I guess, would know. It's out there. Like, you've told your story before. I guess I'm just curious. Were you obsessed with wrestling? Did you like
here's
wrestling?
Here's the way it started. The guys that we all worked out of the gym were all wrestling fanatics. And at the beginning, I really wasn't really into wrestling that much. I mean, you know, when I was a younger kid, I remember seeing Bruno Sammartino and stuff like that. And the guys at the gym would goof around it all the time. And I knew seeing the AWA on Saturday and Sunday mornings, you know, because that was huge in Minnesota. Well, we were all huge working out at the gym. And then one day...
Why were you at the gym?
Just working out. I mean, I was working out for football. I mean, sports, I was a junior college ball player. I was a junior college All-American linebacker and tackle. And then, of course, got my ex-girlfriend pregnant. And had to throw away my D1 rides, you know, after that. But in comes this guy, 6'6", blonde hair, tan like something, and it's Hogan. And Hogan came into our gym because he asked, "Hey, where's the best hardcore gym in the city?" Next thing you know, he's in our gym, and I'm just an 18-year-old kid.
Which is called what, by the way?
It was called The Gym.
Just The Gym.
Just The Gym, man.
And who owned it? Some legend?
A friend of mine named Jim Youngner. And Hawk and I actually bought in with Jimmy and became partners with him for like 25 years. So Hogan came in, and I said, "Well, my God, look at the size of that guy, right? He's huge." Then I went to the St. Paul Civic Center and watched him wrestle Nick Bockwinkel. And my jaw just dropped on the reception he got. And he looked like a freaking giant walking through the crowd. Boom. And then shortly after that, he went did the Thunder Lips thing with Stallone, did the movie, the Rocky movie.
Do you think you had a different, like, do you think you had, when you saw him wrestle, do you think that clicked in your brain because you had seen him at the gym?
Like, because you, not that you knew him, but you're like, oh, that's a guy that I just saw working out, and now I see him. Like, it made it more a little more realistic. Does
that make sense? You know, that had put the thought in the back of our mind, but I think what really cleared out everything was, like, you got to understand, man, I mean, I was already, by 19, like 270 pounds powerlifting in the gym. Because, I mean, back in the day when everything was legal, we were gassed to the gills, you know. And because we were getting tested by doctors, making sure our bodies were healthy and everything else. I'll never forget, man, when we were working at a bar called one time called Grandma B's. And Grandma B's, now you got to understand, you had John Nord the Berserker. You had Hawk, who was at EMC, because we did wet t-shirt contests like every freaking other day. Rough job at Grandma B's.
What is that with EMCs?
Well, he was a master of ceremonies, you know.
Oh, he was an MC.
Yeah, but they called the DMC because it's a long story.
Okay.
So we're there. You had Nord, you had Hawk, you had myself, you had Ravishing Rick Rude, you had Barry Darso, Smash Demolition, and Scott Norton, and a guy who wrestled with the Koloffs called Vladimir Pietrov was a Koloff's cousin. We all bounced at the same bar. And Ed Sharkey was the bartender. So Ed Sharkey told us, geez, guys, you guys are all pretty good here, pretty tough. He goes, I trained Jesse the Body Ventura in wrestling. And I'm thinking about doing another wrestling camp. It's been 25 years and I'm not done one. I'm thinking about doing one. Now, Eddie was pretty good. I mean, Eddie wrestled, you know, Hardy Race and Vern Gagne and wrestled a lot of main event matches. And said, you want to do a camp? And I said, I don't know, man. And my dad was heavy on my rear end about getting a job. He said, you better get a job. You got to pay for, you got a kid now. You need to pay for things and everything else. And so you can imagine the comments I got from my dad when I say, hey, Dad, I'm going to go through pro wrestling camp. And he goes, oh, my God. Yeah. Why pro wrestling? And, you know, never did we think that we'd even have a chance to make it. And I actually was going through pro wrestling camp because I knew the pummeling and all the stuff that we were going to do anaerobically was going to be good. I was actually training for a walk-on trial with the New Jersey Generals with the United States Football League that Donald Trump owned. And I had a guy I was working with that was going to try to get me a tryout. He goes, well, here's a tryout date, Joe. Train for it. We'll work out the particulars later. So I was lifting and doing all my running. And I said, well, maybe I'll get some pummeling in that'll help me with my wind. And wouldn't you know it, Ole Anderson was good friends with Ed Sharkey. And they said, they got to understand that Arn Anderson and Matt Bourne were the Georgia Championship Wrestling champions at the time, right? Tag champs. Well, Matt Bourne got himself in a little bit of trouble and got arrested for statutory rape.
No, Matt Bourne?
Yeah, for statutory rape. So he got fired from the company. So now the belts are vacant. Ole goes, well, business is way down. I need something new and different. And the Road Warrior movie had just come out and with Mel Gibson had just finished. And he says to Ed Sharkey, you got any good big guys? He goes, well, I think I got a couple guys you might want to look at. Of course, then there's Hawk and I.
Yeah, but there's also seven guys who are all huge in jail, right? It's almost like he could have just picked and played.
Well, you could have, but I'll be really honest with you. At that time, Hawk and I were probably the most muscular and athletic looking of all the bunch because, you know, Barry was like 370 because he was powerlifting and, you know, and Nikita wasn't that big because he had broken his leg at that time. So he wasn't training that much. He had a bar in his leg that he had to get in there and he'd get that taken out. He just watched camp. But, man, and so we got the opportunity to go. And you can imagine our face the very first day we go to Georgia Championship Wrestling, walk in the locker room, and I looked around, bro, and I said, there is Paul Orndorff, there is Sergeant Slaughter, there's Tito Santana, Tommy Rich, Dusty Rhodes, Terry Dory Funk, the Briscoes, and then here Hawk and I come in not knowing a thing. I mean, we knew how to wrestle. I mean, Eddie never got in a ring with us. Sharky, we would punch each other literally in the freaking nose and ball. We would all have nosebleeds at the end of the day because we didn't know it was a work punch.
Did you ever wrestle a match before you got to Georgia?
No. No. And so the first day we got on TV, they gave us the belts. And then Ole gets everybody together in the locker room. He says, listen, this is what's going to happen. these guys are going to beat the dog shit out of you guys, and you guys are going to take it.
To the top guys also, he said that too?
To everybody. And, you know, and we had conversations with all, you know, stay away from the face, stay away from the private areas.
Yeah.
But be reckoned, our gimmick was Street Fighters, and he rolled because of what we did in the past. Because Hawk and I, that whole group of guys that were together that I mentioned, a lot of us, probably about four of us, did a lot of stuff on the side from bouncing, like collecting money for people and doing that kind of crap. You know, we all had kids we had to pay for, and, you know, not proud of what I had to do back then now, but it was a life experience, and being an inner city kid, it worked out good for my gimmick. Because then they said, just beat two Street Fighters. I said, okay.
Do you remember your first match?
God, all I remember is, man, I felt so sorry for poor Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner.
Were they the two?
We kicked their rear ends.
And
they're
like respected great wrestlers.
Oh, respected great wrestlers. And poor Tim Horner, literally, you know, he had that skin was like, you know, the guy that doesn't want, he puts on the extra, extra lotion for sunblock.
Yeah,
you
know?
That's Tim Horner. I call him fish belly white. And when he get done wrestling us, bro, he would have slaps and forearm slaps and clothesline slaps all over his body. Like he had just been through somebody jumped him in the alley, right? It was crazy, man.
When you went out there that first time, like, did they just put the gear on, they had stuff made for you, ready to go?
No, nothing. Back then we just went there, and I actually had longer hair, and Hawk had to shave his hair in a buzz. And then when we met with Ole and Bill Watts, they said, listen, man, you guys are going to be the Road Warriors. Do you have any nicknames you use? And I said, well, man, the guys used to tell me I was like an animal in the gym, you know. So, okay, Ole goes, you're animal. Then Hawk goes, yeah, hey, I can be Hawk. I can fly around. Just out of the top of his head, out of the blue, he goes, okay, you're Hawk. I mean, who would have thought it would have worked for 22 years, right? And then
what if he was like, they call me sexy, and they're like, all right, you're sexy.
Animal sexy. That would have been great, right? No, and then they said, we want you to put face paint like the guy in a movie, which is just a couple lines under your eyes, like the Australian guy. And we said, okay. And I said, well, when we did that, we kind of felt like we looked like freaking Coat Chiefs, you know, like some Indian from a movie. So we said, nah, man, I don't want to do that. So then I said, how about we do a design? And then, you know, the Ultimate Warrior's paint job was actually Hawk's first paint job. And then mine was kind of like this, my face paint I do now, but without the spider.
So explain to me that Hawk's first paint job, did the Warrior, like,
he copied it straight out.
Has that been said before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sting will tell you that. So both Sting and the Warrior copied our paint jobs.
Gotcha. They said, like, we didn't know what to do.
The Blade Runner thing. Oh, yeah, bro. At the time, you got to understand. I mean, after we went in, the company that was dead on its rear end, and after 6 months, 8 months, it was already, we were back to selling out buildings that had never been sold out, right, for Georgia Championship Wrestling. And, of course, a lot of guys helped us along the way, like Stan Hansen's and the Briscoes and the Funks that laid down for us, and Dusty. I mean, we took Dusty's eye out with a spike, man. That was like, that still gets talked about today. Mm-hmm. And fans wanted to see, you know, we were heels at the time, so they wanted to see us get beat up. And then it just got to the point where they respected us so much, they loved what we were doing. You know, society started flipping around.
Okay, so this is a two-parter for you. A, how big, like looking back, how crazy did your egos get if they got big? Just because the idea of like, Ole had that meeting and was like, right, first day of wrestling, you're just beating everybody. And then I want to know, like, was there ever a point where you got humbled or there was a humbling where you realized, like, oh, man.
Well, you know what? Our egos never really got big with it because we still had so much to learn, man. And we had good guys like Ole and Paul Ellering tell, because they put Ellering with us right away. I said, you got any advice? He goes, just shut your mouth and listen.
So you knew that right away.
I said, okay. Yeah. And Ed Sharkey told us that too. Ed never got in a ring with us, but that's what Ed told us. Shut your mouth and listen. Be humble, shut your mouth and listen. So that's what we did. Anytime we went to the locker room, we were the first guys to go over and shake everybody's hand because we were the new guys. Thank you. We know we're probably going to hurt you. You know, I mean, you know, because we were just raw.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things I think that separated us, is that we never really did hurt anybody. We were physical, and it looked brutal. If you look back at some of the old matches now, the job guys, they wouldn't be able to say the same thing, because mm-hmm. we beat the crap out of them. But the other top guys, we were a little rough, but they gave us the receipts. I mean, Tommy Rich hit me in the head with a chair one time. I had 18 stitches, you know, and you know, Hawk, nobody wanted to tag with us, because we would do an eight man or something. We would break everybody's blood, their blood vessels in their hands. And because we were slapping each other's hands so hard, we were callous. Other guys are going, my Lord, you guys are killing us, you know. But we did get humbled a couple of times. I mean, I remember one time, Harley Race and Stan Hansen sat us aside in Cleveland, Ohio, and they said, listen, I love you guys, but you're killing us. We want you guys to sit here and throw punches against this wall until your fingers don't bleed. Because you're hitting us and we're bleeding and you're freaking killing us. Mm. And we literally stood against the wall and punched and punched and punched until we finally got it down. And I realized I wasn't a great puncher. Hawk was a great puncher. I was a better kicker, drop kicker, that kind of thing, you know, power slam guy. So I let Hawk throw all the punches, man. I really did after that.
What about, like, career humblings, if that makes sense? Like, because you guys rode at such a high for so long.
Well,
was there a point where...
I think one of the things that was a career humbling thing was, you know, when Hawk really had the problems with substance abuse. And I remember when Vince got so mad, I think for 1 year there with the WWF, I don't think we won a match for the whole year. And thank God we were who we were, because at that time, the people farted at it and they said, oh, this is bull crap, man. Nobody's gonna beat these guys anyway. So it didn't really hurt us. But that was humbling, because I had to revamp and say, listen, Hawk, bro, you got to play ball with these guys. The business is evolving and changing. You got to be a businessman. And Hawk and I had a lot of discussions about this. I said, listen, you ain't going to go to 3M or Honeywell or whatever and do what you're doing without getting fired. You can't expect to do this here without getting fired. You just can't do it. You know, and Hawk and I had a lot of arguments actually about that stuff. You know, but I mean, we were always really respectful of the business, never forgot where we came from. I mean, this business has been great to me. I lived in a few really nice homes over the year, got to make some great investments, got to meet a lot of top people. Heck, I'll never forget the one time that Ted Turner had a get together, and he goes, the only people I wanted to come from the wrestling program is I want the Road Warriors and Flair at this party. It was a tuxedo party. We had to wear tuxedo. I wore tuxedos with face paint.
And a cut off tuxedo?
Yeah, I should have cut the sleeves off. That would have been awesome. Yeah, yeah. But that tuxedo jacket at that time, bro, was a 64. That's how big it was. It was like a bed sheet.
You said after the Heidenreich stuff, because we were talking over there, you said you had left for 5 years. You had kind of disappeared for 5 years.
Well,
after the Heidenreich stuff?
No. Yeah, it was after Heidenreich, man. When Hawk had passed away in 2003, I didn't do anything. And then I got called in about 2006 to do the thing with Heidenreich. Only because, and the reason why they called me is because the lead LOD stuff was still selling like crazy merchandise-wise.
Right.
Go figure, right?
Yeah.
Because merchandise, nobody told you back then if it was really selling great. And they said, well, it's really selling good here. This is Stephanie McMahon's idea. She wants to bring back the LOD. And I wish they would have taken my idea of it, because they were starting to go national. I was on some of the first trips over to Barcelona and stuff like that.
International.
And so my idea was, let Animal go on a Legion of Doom search. Let me go watch all these athletes at all these different camps, and let me handpick and have guys fight or wrestle to be a member of the LOD. But then they said, no, we got this kid here, we'll do Heidenreich. And I kind of had mixed feelings, and I knew with his gimmick, it really wasn't an LOD type gimmick. He always did the Popeye thing, you know, going out, yams, go yams type of deal, you know. And it wasn't really the right thing for him to do, or for me to do, to be with him. But I said, you know what, I'm going to be a businessman. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with the flow this time. Then Heidenreich, God bless him, man, because John's a great guy, was almost as bad as Hawk was with the substance abuse.
Yeah.
They found him sleeping on the New York Thruway with bleeding from his ears and stuff from the sinus cavities, and then they fired him. you know, and he didn't respect. He was a big Road Warrior fan, Heinrich was, but he didn't respect the break he got there because they made us WWE champs. They were getting ready to give us a huge, huge push, and Heinrich screwed it up. Mm. And then after that, man, I kind of said, you know, be honest with you, I said, screw this. I said, I'll do appearances every now and then. And so that I started a timber company over in West Africa in Liberia, and I actually was gone over there for 5 years.
So you moved to Africa, that's what you said.
Well, I didn't move there fully, but I spent my longest stint there was 6 months at a time.
What, sitting in a hotel?
No. We had a compound. Okay. What we did, we had a big fenced-in compound that had a big 15-foot wall with barbed wire, and we had 30 guards that we worked for us, and we had 150 African employees. And I'm talking, we had backhoes, graders, dump trucks. We had 14 Safari Ford Rangers, and obviously because you're in the jungle, and we did a lot of stuff in and out between mining and looking for timber and buying precious stones to sell to jewelers and stuff.
At any point when you're doing all that stuff, were you like, I miss wrestling, or I feel like I'm not a wrestler? Did that stuff come into your head?
No, because I actually thought that, hey man, this is going to be so good, I'll be able to take the next step in my life. Mm. And then I had a couple of partners that were idiots.
Yeah, but you know how wrestlers feel. Yeah. It's hard to let go, right?
Yeah, it's hard to let go. But I think the guys in wrestling that were true athletes before they got into wrestling can let that thing go from the entertainment end of it. I never reached the levels that my son James reached in football, being All-Americans and setting tackle records in the pros and everything else. But I was comfortable enough with what I achieved athletic-wise. I knew the big difference between a show and athletics. Mm. And once you work so hard to achieve what you achieve in athletics, when you're working the athletics, you really you got to have common sense and let it go because it's a show. You know what I mean? And it's always time for the next group to come in. Very few guys get the last, like, you know, Hogan, Andre, the Road Warriors, this long, over 30 years, where people still want to buy your stuff. That's freaking crazy to me. But I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I love the wrestling fan. That's why when I do all my appearances, man, like at your guys at Pro Wrestling Tees here, man, I bring my shoulder pads on. I let the fans put them on for the photo. Mm-hmm. If they want, you know, if I wish I was here longer because I'd face paint everybody.
Right.
And let them pose and be, you know, they could be a member of the LOD for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It makes their day because all the fans spend their hard-earned money to listen to you, to listen to me, to go all the matches, all the shows, and they deserve to get more back. You know what I mean? That's my vision of it now.
I see the thing. Okay, to end this thing, to do a full circle, we are here, we're doing this at Pro Wrestling Tees, and there's this... You know, Ryan and I, we had this idea, you know, this vision of putting the wrestlers and the t-shirts together. And so I did want to talk about the idea of Zubaz, just kind of how that all came together, why it was successful. And then also I want to tie it into Ribera, because as a wrestler, I've been there, you know, I got my jacket.
Sure.
And
sure.
A lot of people, you know, it's only because of you. And I don't know how many wrestlers know that. And I just want to make sure that they know that's not a thing. That's not a thing if it isn't for you guys, right?
Well, we kind of put it on the map real big. I mean, Ribera had a lot of sumo friends, you know, like Kanishki and Akibono and all the guys who were grand champions, Takanahana, Wakanahana, because Hawk and I know all the sumos because we used to bet on them. We'd bet on them when they had sumo tournaments over there when it was on TV. But, you know, you had some guys over there, like they were very popular, like Dory and Terry Funk. But when Hawk and I first trip over there and we beat Dory and Terry Funk, people went, whoa. And then when we went 2 out of 3 falls and we beat Jumbo, Saruta, and Tenru for the belts, it was another whoa. I mean, Hawk and I never went over 5 minutes, and here we are doing a 2 out of 3 fall match. And 2 of the falls were like 20 minutes. We were gassed.
Yeah.
You know, but but yeah, and so that it kind of put Ribera's, because you know, being a Ribera's, outside on this one awning is nothing but pictures of Hawk and I on the one side for about 12, 15 feet. And it's pretty cool. That to me is surreal. That to me is surreal. At a steak restaurant in Japan, there's my picture up on the guy's awning. And that blows my mind every time I see it.
And it's a rite of passage as a wrestler to go to Japan and to go to Ribera and get your jacket. And
yeah, like, if you're a gaijin or an American wrestler, if you don't go to Ribera's, and it, first of all, you got to be somebody. He won't give anybody his jacket. You got to be somebody good to get his jacket. And but if you go there and you know he'll if it's an underneath guy, he's got his levels. He's funny. Think of the underneath guy had a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or if he has an extra sweatshirt or something, I'll give it to somebody. As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to, you guys, your Pro Wrestling Tees do t-shirts for Ribera's. I'm getting ready. I just ordered them 500 sweatshirts, the hoodies, and 500 jackets for, he's going to order from us for Zubaz.
Nice.
Send them over for him here pretty soon. But out of doing that, we became such good friends with Ribera. See, Ribera, Toshi, the son, and his dad, they call him Papa, used to come to my house every spring in Minnesota. And they would come. I had a John Deere tractor because I had like 10 acres of grass, right? And they would ride my tractor and just lay in the grass because those guys don't ever get to see grass like that ever that much. Mm-hmm. You know, and they'd go out in my pool and swim. And we became friends. And every time they came over to the States, we would sell them. I mean, seriously, I would have Homeland Security would call me and say, we have a Japanese guy here that says he's coming to your house. He's got $100,000 cash. I said, yeah, he's coming to my company, Zubai. He's going to buy some stuff. And he would spend every bit of that 100 grand, but buy all the stuff from us for cost.
Mm-hmm.
He still handed out Zubaz to people.
Yeah.
They have them stored up in their attic somewhere where he's still handing out stuff of Zubaz and the gym. The gym jackets, the brown and gold gym jackets, he still hands those out to people.
Well, and he stamped Ribera on them now.
Yeah, and he puts his own logo on them,
too. On the gym jackets.
Because we told him we didn't care. Go ahead and do it, man, if you want to do it. So, yeah, man. So I was actually, Hawk and I were actually out in L.A. And I don't know if you remember, there was a bodybuilder called Mike Christian. Mm-hmm. And Mike Christian had this line of clothes called Everywhere. And At the time, I was a powerlifter squatting, and we had the most horrible time finding nothing but the old school cotton sweatpants. And I said, man, can't we find some loose clothing that we can get and wear? And I came back, and I brought a pair of Mike Cushion Everywhere back to my partners, they were my sales guys at the gym. I owned two gyms at the time. It was Twin Cities Gym in St. Paul and the gym in Minneapolis. And I said, listen, do you guys ever see these? Yeah, we sold those in magazines. I said, is there any way we can try to figure out doing something? He goes, it's funny you ask, because we were thinking about trying to do a clothing line. Now, these are my two head sales guys at the gym. We actually had a girl that was a seamstress. We found some material. She sewed a couple pair of those pants, mocking the design of the Mike Christian Everywhere. That looks awesome. And then we had a deal with a textile firm in Hall River.
She found the design of like the weird zigzag or whatever this is.
Well, we have a special zigzag stitch, okay? That's our patent stitch.
Yeah.
It's in the waistband and all the seams for Zubaz. And we did that and we designed that. And there's a textile mill in Hall River, I think it's South Carolina. And I've actually been down to their mill and they make all the milled stuff for us at the time. And we started doing our patented stitch, and next thing you know, Hawk and I were wearing Zubaz on WTBS when we were working for the NWA, and every rundown we did, we would have black, pink, and white Zubaz, or whatever pro football team we had. The Chicago Bears at the time had the orange and blue with the orange bear head in them, you know. And
well, my dad was a clothing salesman, so he would take me to the stores that he would sell. And I remember going to the stores and seeing the posters of
J.C. Penney's.
Yeah.
J.C. Penney's, man. All they carried Zubaz. We actually went. J.C. Penney's headquarters is in, I think it's in Dallas. It's Dallas, Texas at the time. And we went in there and they had all their store managers who were their buyers was on TV at the time. It was brand new. At that time, they were so far ahead of their time. It was on closed circuit TV. So they had a TV camera there, and it went to every JCPenney outlet that was in existence. And Hawkeye went on there for 5 minutes, and this is Zubaz right here.
Yeah.
We're the top tag team. This is going to be the top hot clothing company. Bam. And next thing you know, we had Major League Baseball, NFL, National Hockey League, NCAA. So we were everywhere for, I mean, fast. Like in 2 years went bam, like zero to about $30 million in 2 years.
And there's a whole locker room of wrestlers who are just like, well, I'm trying to get rich just by being a wrestler. And here you guys are thinking the future, right?
Well, and we handed everybody Zubas.
Yeah.
So everybody did a rundown or did an interview was wearing Zubas. Finally, Jim Crockett yelled at us, what is this? Yeah. Is this Zubas company or is this the NWA?
And now we know how it took over the wrestling world.
Yeah, man. So, and then we took a step further back when we got ready to make the spike shoulder pads. We did NFL stuff with Dan Marino and Jim Kelly. We paid Jim Kelly to wear our hats on the sidelines. Hawk and I did a poster with Dan Marino. We had Miami Dolphins pants on with Tux jackets on, and Marino. Then we did, you know, back then, ESPN did the Super Bowl parties with MTV, and we did the stuff with Dan Marino, and then we all had Zubas on. We kicked it off, and bam, bam. Then that's how I met the guys at the NFL to give me shoulder pads, and then I made the shoulder pads in my garage.
All right, look at that.
So my garage like this, like Picasso, put the thumb up, looking at it like that. And I said, I'll drill a hole here. And I had a buddy of mine at Honeywell make me and mill me some spikes on a lathe, nickel plated them. There was the birth of the black and gold shoulder pads.
That's
right there.
Wonderful.
Yeah, man.
I mean, you can't draw them, but you could.
I can't draw them, but I can tell you what I want, unless somebody else is. You know, has the talent to draw. I'm just the guy that does the vision.
Let's do some plugs for you. Your shirts are at prowrestlingtees.com/ what is it, animal? Do we know?
Road I Warriors? Think it's, I don't know what Ryan put on there for my tees.
Well, they're on Pro Wrestling Tees. Are we announcing this thing that you're doing coming up, or is that a secret?
What's that?
The podcast.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm signing up with JR, Jim Ross, and Bruce Pritchard, and Conrad Thompson. The podcast.
So you're going to have your own podcast.
I have my own podcast there. I haven't figured quite what the name I'm going to use yet. I think we're going to call it the Doomsday Hour or something, you know, off our finishing move. But I'm excited to do it, man, because, I mean, I do great podcasts like the one you have here, and I do a lot of guys' podcasts.
You're a great talker.
And I love the business, you know what I mean? And it's good, and it's entertainment. And I love entertaining the questions the fans have.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the fans are nostalgic. They love hearing about what we just talked about now, hearing about old matches. Like I already did my first one on the Night of the Skywalkers.
Nice.
What would that was like, you know, and that was a weird feeling being up there. But yeah, man, and I do that. And I do personal appearances, you know. People contact me in my Joseph Michael Laurinaitis, my Facebook. You can private message me there or at RW Animal, you know, because there's a lot of imposters out there, as you know, on websites and Facebook, you know. But those are my two true ones.
Which one's that? Twitter, RW Animal?
My Twitter is at RW Animal. My Facebook is Joseph Michael Laurinaitis. I had to use my real name because some idiot had the real Rotor Animal, and that's not me. So if you're sending stuff there and you're not getting replies, because that's not me.
Okay.
You know, but I answer everybody, and I handle most of my own bookings. If I get overbooked, I have my wife handle some of them too. But yeah, man, I like getting out there. I do motivational speaking. I don't mind speaking for colleges, junior high school colleges, get motivated, even corporations to whatever works. And I even speak at churches on Sunday too. You know, so you know, I do a lot of stuff in that aspect because you know, I'm a realist when it comes to talking about the Lord. But you know what I mean? It's part of everybody's life, and you know, sometimes it does good for young people to hear from someone like me. You know what I mean?
Very nice.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate you being on.
Thanks, man. Oh, what a rush, bro. Pro Wrestling Tees. Buy the t-shirts.
All right. The Road Warrior. I always love having chats with those kind of guys. He's been around so long. And he's still, like, hustling. That's what I find kind of romantic, at least looking into my future as a professional wrestler or in the wrestling industry or whatever. He's still going for it, still going for the deal, still going for the bucks or whatever it might be. And it's commendable. Thank you so much, Road Warrior Animal, for being on the show. Don't forget to send in those AMA questions, cultwrestling@gmail.com. Use a voice memo. Send it on over. That's probably going to be the New Year's special. All right, before we get out of here, let's get in some plugs and upcoming events. Best way to support, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, Twitter and Instagram, at Colt Cabana, Facebook / AOW Podcast, also / Colt Cabana. My storytelling podcast, Pro Wrestling Fringe, plus past archives of this show, they're ad-free. They're on StitcherPremium.com/Colt. Use the code Colt, get a free month. ColtWrestling@gmail.com is my very public email. I also have a YouTube channel. Also, ColtCabana.com is my website. You can go there and see the P.O. Box, which is a new P.O. Box. Send me some stuff. Aaron sent me a card. The Thompson sent me a card. A couple others, too. I'll give them shout outs. Upcoming December 15th, December 16th, January 20th, New York, Philadelphia, Nashville, ROHWrestling.com. I will be doing commentary. Then I'm heading to Japan December 24th, December 28th, December 31st, and January 3rd, Tokyo, Japan, DDTPro.com. Saturday, January 6th, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Facebook / First Wrestling. Friday, January 12th, across Wisconsin, Facebook / River City CW. Sunday, January 14th, Chicago, Illinois, Facebook / Zello Pro. That is the show for this week. Huge thank you to you guys at home. Thanks for telling your friends about the show. Thanks to Road Warrior Animal and Pro Wrestling Tees. Thanks to Kid Guy Jeff and Stu Stone. Kid Russell and Matt Jenkins on the music. Dane Miller and Creaky with Tech. HighSpots.com is a sponsor. They have a VOD service that's amazing. You watch PWG, Kevin Steen Show, $5 Wrestling. They also have AMA knee pads, gear, mask, wrestling rings, and more. 1HourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingCrate.com. They help run the wrestling industry. And TweakedAudio.com/Colt. The earbuds that I use get over 30% free shipping just because we also another show. We're winding down the year of podcasting. I'm in a new crib. I'm putting my wrestling stuff all over this room. I got to go get some frames. I got a new couch. Sometimes you think you should buy stuff that like society tells you to buy, but I walked into Bob's Furniture. It's a plug. It's a free plug for Bob there. And I saw a couch with the remote-y things where you just like recline and it was comfortable. And I know I shouldn't have gotten those, but I wanted the ones where you have remote feet that you just can lay back and do nothing. So that's what I got. That's some bachelor shit right there. That's what somebody told me. That's some real bachelor shit. I want to be comfortable, and so I am. My Bob's, my Burndell, my ghost bed, we're really doing it. We're becoming adults, and that's a sneak peek towards 2018 podcasting. Ooh, what's it going to be? Colt, what are you going to do with this podcast? We don't know. You'll have to find out. This has been The Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thank you. I'm just gonna say, I'm sorry I interrupted in your match at WrestleMania. I punched your partner 4 times. It's on YouTube.
Did he sell? Did he even react to it?
I was in the crowd, but you guys won. And so that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, hey, bro. It's all, at the end of the day, the fans are happy. They're cheering.
Can you forgive me?
I forgive you, bro. Don't worry about it. I forgive you.
Thank you very much.
Till tomorrow. Oh,